Inspiration Wednesdays.
Welcome back to the show. It is now 11 minutes past 2, and I am joined now by Stacey Stent, satirical cartoonist, animator, and graphic designer, who's worked extensively in print and online media. She's found a good home in the brave investigative magazine Noseweek for her monthly cartoon stint. So you might recognize her name if you are an avid Noseweek reader. Welcome to the show, Stacey.
Hello.
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us, Stacey, and welcome to the show. And congratulations on the recent exhibition of your work hosted by AfriCartoon, and the Johannesburg Institute for Advanced Study at the University of Johannesburg.
Thank you. I'm kind of glad it's over.
I think it would be interesting for us to start at the beginning, for our listeners to know a little bit about your background and what influenced you growing up that led to you to being a cartoonist.
Well, I drew a lot as a child, and I used to like as I got older in junior school and in high school, drawing caricatures, and I often made little birthday cards. But you know, that was just a thing that I did, and I didn't really think about it. And
what about your parents? Did they have an influence?
My parents did have an influence, which I've recognized in later years. They were both journalists. My mother was a journalist and a poet, and my father was sports journalist for the Cape Times. Mm. So I think that the fact that I do strip cartoons, which entail a lot of writing and editing, probably have an influence there. Mm. I went to art school after high school, mainly because I spent a lot of time when I was in high school in the art room, and that was because I was often getting sent out of class. I wasn't particularly naughty. I was just a bit of a dreamer, and I wasn't interested, so they just said, get out, and then I'd go down to the art room, and got on very well with the art teacher. And so when I matriculated, I was interested in art, and I also didn't have that many options open, as I'd spent a lot of time outside of the academic arena.
So where did you go from there?
So I went to Michaelis.
Right.
And I eventually graduated there. My first year was wonderful for me, not great on results, but I scraped along into second year. And when I was in second year, I started taking myself really seriously, and I very serious artist, no cartooning or anything on the horizon as yet. Although my mother always used to say to me, you really should do cartooning, because I remember those things that you used to do, and I've still got some of them, and I'd get very offended, and I'd say, I'm a serious artist.
Don't you hate it when your mother's right? How would you describe your comic style?
Well, first of all, as I said, there are two kinds of cartoons. There's block cartooning and strip cartooning. And I have always been related to strip cartooning, as I said, probably because it entails a little bit of
content
and because you've got to reach the punchline at the end of a sequence. And it's a little bit like a storyboard, which I suppose developed my interest in animation, which I'll talk about
and
later.
That's called a strip, is that?
And that's called a strip cartoon.
So what is block?
A block is just like Zapiero does, one cartoon, or Brandon, they do one picture.
Right.
So it's got to contain all the content and everything in there.
Interesting.
But the nice thing about strip cartoons, and why I was attracted to them, is because they can be about conversations. And conversations became what I used to use a lot. A lot of my cartoons, which I then developed for a series called Who's Left for what was then the Weekly Mail, and then developed into the Mail and Guardian.
Yes.
Who's Left had a double meaning. It was Who's Left, but who's left. And I literally, I used to have doors slamming sometimes when I walked into a room because she's going to put down what we said and we're going to see ourselves in cartoons. And often people
You mean your friends?
My friends, and my family. And often people would call me and say, you know, you could have warned me that you were going to do a cartoon about me. And I'd say, actually, it wasn't about you. You know, so there were often sort of parallels across people with conversations.
So your first cartoons were about kind of based on conversations that you heard around your home and amongst your family. And at what stage, what state was the country in at that time?
The country was in a state of emergency. And, you know, we would have these, you know, family get-togethers, you know, sometimes religious reasons. And the conversations would get very fiery because I think there was, you know, just one other cousin and myself who sort of felt that we were, you know, we were sympathetic with the struggle. But the family were frightened. But what really inspired me for the first cartoon and therefore the first series of cartoons was an event that happened one night where, you know, the men all went into one room after supper and started, you know, their little cognacs, and the women stayed around the table. And some of the women started discussing about joining the Black Sash. And, you know, they considered it quite seriously. They felt they should do something, and they were, you know, aware that there was trouble. But they all decided unanimously that their husbands would not like this. Their husbands' businesses would suffer. And so I listened to this quite quietly, and I just enjoyed it, but I still didn't think about cartooning. And then the next day I remember so clearly, I was sitting at a traffic light and I was thinking about this conversation, and I thought, well, you know, I can draw, and there's no cartoon about the angst of the wannabe white left. And let me just do this one from last night and sort of think of a few. And so I went home, and in my mother's voice, my mother had already died, but, you know, her voice, why don't you become a cartoonist? And so I did about 10, and I sent them off to the Weekly Mail. And I heard nothing for weeks, no response at all. And so I...
What did you do?
I know somebody that was going out with a woman that worked at the Weekly Mail. So I said to him, you know, next time you chat to her, ask if she's been aware of these. Yeah, just kind of bring it up in the normal course of your loving conversations. And he called me and he says, your cartoons have been photocopied and they're pinned up all over the place. And, you know, people are really love them. So I said, well, you know, I haven't heard a word. So I took the bull by the horns and I gave Anton Harbour a call. And I said, listen, what's happening? And he said, oh, hasn't anyone got back to you? Oh, well, you know, when can you start? So that was
fascinating.
It, really.
And then it just shows you how important it is to follow up. And, you know, there's so many struggling artists out there. And, you know, you can't just take the rejection on the chin. You have to follow up and see what's going on.
And I think, and I was lucky enough to sort of be moved to follow up because I had that little sort of, you know, go-between. But I think people should anyway.
Tell us a little bit about the biggest challenges you face as a female cartoonist in this business.
The biggest challenges I face are actually being in a room full of boys when we have our meetings a lot of the time. And, you know, they're good people, but they're not sensitive a lot about their comments. They're not... you know, and some of the work they do also regarding, you know, gender is sometimes questionable. There are a few gems in there, and I do like them. I mean, I'm good friends with Brandon, and I'm good friends with Zapira.
Okay.
And they don't sort of go there, and Chip as well. But you know, some of the younger guys, they kind of do sort of cross over. But it's... It's okay, you know.
Yeah.
It's not so that on a sort of day, because we're on a WhatsApp group and we sort of see each other around, and
that must be a funny WhatsApp group to be on.
It's a very, very. Sometimes I see it, a whole lot of stuff coming and I think I'm not in the mood, you know.
Can't engage.
But it's good.
Talk to me a little bit about your mentors. You mentioned in your biography that you were very influenced by the famous American cartoonist and playwright Jules Pfeiffer. Tell us a little bit about him.
I'll tell you a bit about him. Jules Pfeiffer must be well into... I believe he's still alive. Yeah. I always wish I'd met him, but I'm probably not going to. As children, we were raised in our family on Jules Pfeiffer, so that almost branded the humor. And in a way, Jules Pfeiffer creates these characters which are a little bit like Woody Allen characters. You know, there's Bernard Mergendieler, who's very sort of insecure, sensitive guy, you know, very like the characters that Woody Allen plays. And there's a character called Huey, who's kind of big and butch and a bit of a misogynist and a woman abuser. And he also does political cartoons, but he also did, which we got used to. I suppose when I was 11 and 10 and reading Jules Pfeiffer, I didn't really understand the American politics he was dealing with, but I did understand the human content of the sort of, you know, social satire that he was describing at the time. And terribly funny. And so I find his influence lasts until now. I mean, I'm very aware. And I do think that, I mean, I've been influenced by other people that influenced him. You know, Schulz, for instance, he was influenced by, and Art Spiegelman to a certain degree.
Something that's interesting about Pfeiffer's work is it's very human, and that also that element also exists in your work. That kind of taking big situations, often about people who are leading our country,
exactly,
and making them very relatable. Talk a little bit about how you do that.
Well, I suppose it was easy to do it with the first batch of cartoons. It was easy to do with Who's Left, because sometimes they were just straight conversations. Honestly, they I'd have to twist the punchline a bit, and the punchline is always difficult, because it's changed a lot and you move things around. But mostly those were easy. The cartoons that I do now and the ones that I do for Noseweek, which are mostly about the present government and the ruling party. I mean, it's a gift too, because of the things that they do and say. But my agenda is to make them sort of vulnerable and silly and kind of more non-entity than they'd like to be.
Interesting. I want to talk more about that and the Noseweek cartoons. If you've just joined us, we're talking to Stacey Stent, who is the only published female political cartoonist in the country. If you'd like to ask her a question, or if you are an aspiring cartoonist or anything really, you can call us on 021-446-0567 or SMS us on 31567. You can send us a WhatsApp note on 072-567-1567. But before you do that, we're going to take a breather.
Cape Talk.
Cape Talk.
Call us on 021-446-0567.
Welcome back to the show. This is Bianca Reznikov standing in with for Pippa. And with me in the studio, I have Stacey Stent, the only published female political cartoonist in the country. And we're talking a little bit about her strip Stent in the Noseweek. And now also, I need to raise this question to you, Stacey. Why are there no women in your field? And what are you going to do to make a difference about this?
The problem does seem to be with editors, who are a lot of whom are male.
Right.
And The cartoon editor of the New Yorker, Bob Mankoff, has blatantly said that he doesn't like employing women. I mean, he's in a terribly powerful position. He's recently resigned, but he had a long run.
What is the reason?
The reason is he doesn't think women are funny, and other editors think they don't think women should be funny, or should go into politics, or should talk about sex, or
right.
You know. So
if a man does it, it's funny. But if a woman does it, it's seen as vulgar.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And so most of the women, I mean, there are a lot of women cartoons out there, but they're not the mainstream political cartoonists. They're dealing with domestic issues. I mean, they're political issues, or community issues, or feminist issues, or lesbian issues, but they're often secondary, even if they can be in the same publication sometimes as a mainstream political cartoonist, but those are very, very rarely. There are in the States, there is Sidney Wilkinson and Telnes, who are the two main mainstream political cartoonists in the States, and they're both extremely good. But they fought hard. They fought hard to get where they are.
Okay. Tell me, are there certain subjects that are taboo for you?
For me?
Mm.
I don't, as a rule, like self-censorship. I don't support any kind of censorship in the cartoon world or in most other areas. But for me, I am very sensitive to the issue of, and you can see a lot of cartoons like this where black people are drawn as monkeys. Right. I will never, ever do that. There's a legacy that a lot of white people don't understand. Mm. I mean, they've drawn Obama as a monkey. Mm. I mean, it's just cheap. It doesn't, you know, it's even if it's a bad leader or something, you know, find another analogy, because there's a whole long history there that is really offensive.
Mm. And religion, is that something you steer away from?
Religion I don't steer away from as much, because I think that, you know, you need to, everybody has a right to be critical about religion.
Mm.
I think different religions have different levels of tolerance as to how they're addressed, and also in the cartoon world. In fact, Sidney Wilkinson said that if Chris O'Feely's sculpture, which he made out of dung, of the Madonna, you know, which was published in the New York Times, why was that published when, in fact, they wouldn't publish the Muslim cartoons?
Right.
You know, why were you able to offend Catholics and not offend? And, you know, and the Muslim cartoons did make a lot of people very frightened, and so did Charlie Hebdo.
Absolutely. That.
But
were killed.
Because people were killed. But I don't think people should. I think you could picket, and I think that you can write letters, and I think that you can boycott, but then kill people.
So, because we have time constraints and we're going to have to go to our news headlines soon, just a final question. Are you going to miss drawing Mr. Zuma? Was he an easy face to draw, an easy target?
Easy peasy. Yeah, I think we're all going to miss him. I mean, it was quite funny because when, you know, a lot of us cartoonists were in contact with each other when the results were coming out, and we all found out we were all drawing like crazy. You know, we were all on the WhatsApp chat and we were all doing these drawings, and quite a few people said, you know, that's the one thing we're going to miss about him, because he's just so easy to draw and he's just so easy to make cartoons about.
Yeah. And what about Mr. Ramaphosa? Have you been practicing his smile?
Not quite yet. I have drawn him a few times before. He's appeared in a couple of my cartoons and a couple of my animations. But I haven't really kind of got the whole, you know, I'll have to sharpen my pencil.
It must have been an exciting time for you this week as a cartoonist.
It was very, very exciting. And I mean, our minds were just flooded with one cartoon idea after another as things were developing.
Before we go to news headlines, I have to tell you that an SMS has come through from someone called Don, who says, Bianca, she probably hasn't told you, but Stacey is also a very accomplished guitarist and folk singer.
Wow, that is even longer ago than I started doing cartoons.
Well, Stacey, we look forward to seeing your work in the coming months with the new ANC regime. And thank you so much for joining us.